Do androids dream of actually being online bots instead of human-like replicants? A look back at Blade Runner. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. Okay, so fun fact, the 1982 science fiction classic Blade Runner was set around now-ish, November 2019, to be specific, in Los Angeles. But the LA envisioned by director Ridley Scott is very different from the LA you would recognize today. For one thing, it rains all the time. It is a dystopian hellscape with flying cars, pervasive technology, and artificial humans known as replicants, who are almost indistinguishable from real humans. Also, almost everyone smokes. Okay, but aside from the obvious, how far off is the movie from present day 2019? And what parts of our current day technological landscape did it actually get right? Amy Webb is founder and CEO of the Future Today Institute and our favorite futurist to have on the show and talk sci-fi. We started with the positives. I asked her what Blade Runner got right.
I think some of the voice commands, being able to talk to computers, I know that doesn't seem like the most interesting or exciting piece of that movie, but I think that was a pretty big leap at the time. It would have been easy for people to imagine robots. People have always imagined robots. I think it would have been a much bigger leap to imagine an ambient interface.
That's such a good detail because, you know, we have so much of that now that it almost like doesn't register. But you're right. If you put yourself in 1982, you're like, oh, okay.
That's exactly, which is why like the flying cars and the, you know, the colonies that have moved off planet, super interesting to think about, but also not that hard to imagine at that time. Mm-hmm. What would have been much harder to imagine would have been the kind of technology that's currently invisible to us that we don't even think about. We just use it.
What do you think Blade Runner gets wrong? Where might it have missed the mark?
I mean, I think there are some obvious pieces like how artificial intelligence would manifest. And, you know, I don't blame anybody. For as long as we've had AI, we've been thinking about anthropomorphizing AI. So it shouldn't really come as a shock that at the time there was an idea that humans would live alongside human-like AIs, right? The replicants. Or that those AIs would be bioengineered in ways that gave them superior cognition or superior physical strength and speed. So I understand where those ideas came from, but obviously they were incredibly wrong. AI is all around us. It just didn't show up that way. But AI is in many ways replicating human, at least human speech and behavior. And I don't think in 82 we had enough computers and enough devices for people to envision a future where, you know, androids walked among us or replicants walked among us in different ways. But we kind of have some of that now in the form of bots, right?
Right. So you're saying even though they're not walking around, that we do have basically passable programs?
I mean, I think given our current fake news problem would tell us that they're pretty believable, right? I mean, the replicants in the movie, for the most part, walked and talked and looked like humans. I guess what I would say is this is kind of like a replicant just in a different container.
I want to talk about the ethics at the core of the plot, because the sort of germ of the whole plot is the idea that these replicants have rebelled against being used as slaves. And, you know, we now have in the physical world, factory robots and care robots and potentially pets. And then, of course, in the digital world, you know, all of these bots that do all kinds of bidding. And I wonder what you think about the kind of ethical implications of our development of AI and robots that do our, you know, our programmed bidding.
Right. So there have been some studies done showing that robots that look very industrial, that don't have any human-like characteristics, we don't empathize with. So if they're doing repetitive tasks or even causing self-harm, you know, it's interesting for us to watch, but we kind of don't care. But once that robot looks and behaves more like another living being, so in this case, I'm thinking about all of the Boston Dynamics robots that you've probably seen videos of, or replicants, right, that we relate to them in a different way. And I think, again, this sets us up on a dangerous path to the future because we ought to ask ethical questions, not just about the service robots in our lives, but also in the ways in which humans are being asked to act like robots. So, you know, one of the interesting outcomes that we never saw in Blade Runner or Space Odyssey or the Terminator, like the canon of sci-fi that deals with AI, one of the future scenarios that nobody ever showed us was a future in which the humans are functioning as robots and the machines are tasked with the cognitive work. And that's what we're starting to see happen already. There are plenty of companies, you know, Amazon is one of them, that rely on a synergy between humans and robots. And it turns out that it costs a lot of money to get robots to do a lot of the fine motor skills, which quite frankly, they're not terrific at right now. Mm-hmm. But it turns out they're much better at some of the cognitive thinking skills. And it's more efficient in terms of energy, but also cost for the machines to do all of the cognitive work and for the humans to do the robotic work, you know? So when we think right. about empathy in robots, we tend to go to these places where we're asking if it's okay for us to enslave machines or treat them in these ways. I don't think we've asked the question, is it okay to enslave humans in a different way? Right? Isn't it?
Right.
Is it possible that we're, again, slave is a very loaded term, mm-hmm. but is it mm-hmm. possible that we've cognitively boxed in or enslaved human cognition?
Yeah, it does seem like these questions of empathy for your fellow person or bot on the internet, the idea of what you can trust and what you can't, those seem to have been very prescient thoughts, right?
Absolutely. And so do some of the other constant themes like control that reflect our current anxieties, I think, and certainly some of the anxieties of the time. You know, computers making their way from corporations into people's homes, communications devices like, you know, very early cell phones that were finding their way into more and more people's use, you know, and it was sort of the very, very, very early days of the commercial internet. So the entire communications landscape was starting to change pretty drastically. And I think people were starting to wrestle with questions that had to do with control. Who controls the police force? Who controls healthcare? Who controls medical supplies? Who gets access? Who doesn't get access? Who winds up with permissions? Who doesn't wind up with permissions? I mean, these are pretty gnarly problems that were being asked, in addition to things like, you know, is it possible that humans have empathy or that the replicants have empathy in ways that don't necessarily complement each other? And what could that mean? You know, I think these are challenging issues that we've been wrestling with for a long time.
I want to ask you, all credit to our engineer, Robin, who right before this interview sent me the side-by-side photos. I had seen on Twitter that Elon Musk said that the new Cybertruck that he just announced was going to be inspired by Blade Runner. Seeing the photos, I had not realized just how inspired. I mean, of all the things that could come true from Blade Runner, did you think the truck would would physically manifest?
It's a good reminder that a lot of our current leaders in technology have been heavily, heavily influenced by sci-fi. You know, Jeff Bezos is a massive Trekkie, and his days growing up watching Star Trek have clearly influenced the path that he's currently on. You know, Elon Musk has been clearly influenced by a lot of those 80s and 90s sci-fi movies, you know, and these are good things, especially, you know, those are good things to remember, especially to those current and aspiring filmmakers. Sometimes you don't realize that really terrific storytelling and, you know, highly, highly effective visuals along the lines of what Sid Mead, you know, used to put together can have real world impact later on.
Amy Webb is founder and CEO of the Future Today Institute. And now for some related links. Here in the future, we do have an ongoing conversation about whether bots should pretend to be humans, whether they have to disclose that they're actually bots, and whether people can tell the difference between an online persona and a real person. But we're still working on something like the Voight-Kampff test from Blade Runner that helps distinguish a human from a replicant. Although apparently, according to a piece I found in Curiosity.com from last year, Researchers from MIT have developed something called the Minimal Turing Test. Now, the Turing Test is supposed to be the threshold for a computer to be able to trick someone into thinking it's a human. The minimal version is more about figuring out what human judges think a robot would say compared to what they think a human would say. So the best word to use to convince human judges that you are also a human is apparently poop. Didn't see that coming, did ya? I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.